worry that you're growing old and nothing has happened in your practice? Are you measuring the days ahead against the days of sitting behind you? They say Buddha took 6 years to wake up, Hakuin 7, Tsongkhapa 8. How many years will it take before you see your true nature face to face? If you're growing impatient, please see the following. A monk asked Joshu, how long did the Buddha's awakening last? Joshu said, please ask him yourself. Autumn thunder, warm rain, clouds jammed up against the sky. Too late, too late. The summer is gone, like a Mega Millions payoff in the old folks' home. What can be done with all this loot? How long did it last? Well, how long did it take? If you don't have the answer, you'll be waiting forever. Wasn't too terrible. That was not from any of the koan collections. I have been trying to write a koan myself. That seems like a sort of an egotistical thing to do in a way, since there's so many wonderful koans. But maybe you should excuse it as a part of my practice. You know, I have thought about this issue for a long time, and it's very much important to me, and I thought maybe this koan would help people in their own practice. Of course, after I wrote it, I thought, gee, you know, this is a pretty difficult thing to create a koan. And I looked at the koans this morning in the Momonkan and the Blue Rock collection, and I thought, you know, this just doesn't measure up. But then I thought, you know, maybe I shouldn't worry about whether it measures up or not. Just try it and see what happens. You know? So this is my koan too. Reading this is my koan too. A monk asked Joshu, how long did the Buddha's awakening last? Joshu said, please ask him yourself. It would be hard to imagine a more beautiful morning than this one, don't you think? We came here in the middle of torrential rain. Last night on the road there were accidents all the way down the Garden State Parkway. I honestly saw at least 3 accidents. There were several pileups. And I saw a couple of cars with, serious damage on the roadside. It seemed like every time I got going, I had to stop, and the visibility was very bad, thick clouds. And now today, you know, it's perfect. It's just perfect. Not too hot, not too cold. This is how many days in a year are like this? And yet, and none of us could have predicted that this would have happened. It's true the weathermen have been saying that weather was going to improve, but nobody told us this was going to happen. Or nobody could have told us this was going to happen. Because there's a real, real openness to life, real openness. You know, some people think that Buddhism is about fatalism. You know, so one of the things that I grew up hearing was that Eastern cultures were fatalistic cultures. And I remember once opening up the almanac, the World Almanac has a, that they publish every year, has a little synopsis of the religious beliefs of each of the major religions. And basically the one on Buddhism, is, which I think is still there, it's been running for about 50 years, it's really depressing. It's like life is suffering and you escape into the void, it said, something like that. And this idea that Eastern religions are deterministic or fatalistic is very widespread. And it is true, you know, if you do something, something else happens, and something else happens after that, and something else happens after that. And so there is a kind of chain of cause and effect. And yet, the world is really open-ended. The whole universe is really open-ended. And it's quite remarkable. Every moment is open-ended like this. And I just think that's so important. I have had to confess to you that I have buy a lottery ticket almost every week. I only permit myself to buy one ticket. It's a Mega Millions jackpot. And I always think now, the Zendo will go over here, and the kitchen will be here, you know, and we'll put the bathrooms at the end of the buildings. The moisture won't build up. So I go in on my, I sometimes eat down in New Brunswick, and I go to the, I stop in a drugstore. The person behind the counter always looks disappointed because I never buy anything except a ticket, you know. I'll always come in and they look hopeful and I say, can I have a Mega Millions? And they give me the ticket, and they're nice, but they look disappointed. I lose every time. Every time I play, I lose. But you know that I could win tomorrow, and you could say, "Well, the chance," but I could win tomorrow. You just can't tell from the past, even though it's true there's cause and effect. You can't tell what's going to happen tomorrow. Now you know it is true that there's cause and effect. So, you know, some people have a harder time with Zen practice than other people. That's just a fact. And sometimes that's the result of the life decisions we make, right? So, if we have lived a life where anger has been very much part of our lives, or fear, you know, if we've done things that are self-destructive, we can create mental habits that take a long time to overcome. And pretty much all of us have done those things. You know, all of us have pretty much done some of those things that are self-destructive or destructive to others. And we've all created negative mental habits. And so, when you sit on the cushion, it's not like you're going to win the lottery every time you sit. Because, you have to deal with cause and effect. You have to work with the karma that you have. And when you sit on the cushion, you have a set of attitudes about what should be happening, and you have a body that you've created over time, and you have these mental habits that may or may not be too comfortable sitting still for hours on end. You know? And this is karma. And a lot of Zen practice is working off our karma, working through our karmic obstacles. And it really requires a kind of heroic determination to do this. Zen practice has a heroic dimension to it. When people become aware, as a matter of fact, it does occur to people sometimes that they really do have karma. I know we have a beginning meditation class on Mondays and Friday nights. and people start doing meditation, and they start becoming aware of how distracted their minds are. You know, people will come in and innocently think that they're going to do some meditation and get rid of their stress. And they start doing meditation, and suddenly they realize, my mind is so distracted, you know, so hysterical. And then, you know, if they do a little more meditation, they begin to realize that they have sort of like these mental habits. You know, eventually, if you meditate long enough, you begin to see your fear, your anger, your impatience, and so on and so on. And then you suddenly realize, yes, you know, there is karma. You know, I've created all of these mental habits that I have to now have to sort of undo. And it's like a mighty work. You know, you have to, it's like shoveling a huge pile of gravel, or moving a huge pile of stones. And this is something we all do every time we sit. You know, and so there is this kind of deterministic quality to life, this kind of deterministic quality. It's unlikely, in a certain sense, you know, that we're going to get the last little karmic obstacle out of the way with the next breath. You know, it's unlikely. We have a lot of karma to work through. On the other hand, there is this amazing openness to life. Because, you know, sooner or later, it really does open up. It really does open up. And, you know, the Buddha said that just being a human being was like really remarkable. Really remarkable development. It's like if you threw a hoop in the water in the Atlantic Ocean, and it drifts out to sea, and somewhere in the ocean a turtle comes up, and he puts his head above water, and it just happens to go through that hoop. Yeah? That would be like the chances of being born a human being. So odds are actually quite against it from the Buddhist standpoint. But it's still happening, and it's still happening, because the world is really open-ended. It's beautiful, open-ended. The whole universe is, you know, from the small scale, on the micro level, the world seems to be like free choice. So, you know, people, ordinary people, think they're constantly making free choices, right? And so they, you know, they've been watching TV all day, and it's been saying, you know, buy Coke, drink Coke, or go get it from the Colonel, you know, and it's like pictures of chicken. Later they think, what'll I eat? Oh, I'll get it from the Colonel, right? It's like a free choice. But it's clearly not free. But at the micro level, looks like a free choice. If you don't look far enough, looks like a free choice. But, you know, you begin to do meditation, you sit on the cushion, you realize, not a free choice. You know, I've been conditioned all day long to get it from the Colonel, to go get my chicken at the Colonel's. Now, how am I going to free myself from this? So, like, at the intermediate level, it doesn't seem to be very free. But at the macro level, everything is unfolding in, like, this beautiful symphony, like beautiful music playing that's never been played before. It's like new koan all the time. See, beautiful music is emerging. Nobody knows how it's going to turn out. See, because it's not like there's a author of the music somewhere. We're all the authors of the music. The whole universe is composing itself. Life is composing itself. You could imagine that somewhere in a room there's the master composer. But a little different view is that everything is a Buddha. So everything is master composer. So the whole universe is unfolding and open. Nobody knows how it's going to turn out. It's just always going to turn out to be Buddha. You know? So when we come to Sesshin, you know, we all have to confront our karma. It's like cause. There it is, cause and effect. But anything can happen in the next moment. Anything can happen. And my feeling is that if we just get out of the way, you know, it's amazing. It's wonderful. You know, last night's so gloomy and wet and foggy, and today it's just beautiful. You know, tomorrow could be wet again. But you know, wet is Buddha too. You know, fog is Buddha too. But there's something amazing about the moment, right? As it arises, as it's just amazing, always fresh, always new. And we the little mind, karmic mind, says, "Well, I know what's coming. Not same thing. Every session, the same thing." Yeah. So you know, tonight, guess what we're having for dinner? Take a guess. Yeah. Rice, lentils. You got it. You guessed. You know, absolutely predictable, right? Lunch. Well, most people help to produce a lunch. So you know, and it's going to be broccoli, right? You cut up the broccoli, it's cause and effect. You know, it's going to be cabbage and potatoes and peas. And indeed, if you come to other sashins, you know, pretty much day one, cabbage, potatoes, and peas. You know, probably broccoli or green beans. You know, I couldn't get any green beans. They look terrible. And so I will go with the broccoli today. You know, this is absolutely predictable. And yet, if you sit and you watch the breath, you work with your koan, you know, you could have a delicious lunch. You could really have a wonderful lunch today, and it has nothing to do really with the food. It has to do with being in the moment. You know, it'll just be, you've eaten it a million times, but it will be so delicious if you can just be in the moment. And you know, there's always something new unfolding. Even though it all, you know, from a certain standpoint, it's always the same. And this is really, I think, like the secret of sesshin. It's a secret of Zen practice. You know, a number of years ago, I was a fan of a writer whose name was, I don't really speak Dutch, or let me put it another way, I don't speak Dutch. His name is Jan Willem van de Vetter, something. My Dutch is as good as my Chinese, you know. So Van Willem van de Wettering wrote a couple of books on Zen practice. He trained in Japan, and one is called The Empty Mirror, and another is called The Glimpse of Nothingness. And they're both pretty decent books. So he wrote a book a few years ago, I think it's called After Zen, and I strongly don't recommend it. And I was so disappointed by the book because, he stopped sitting and he's a sportsman, he shoots animals and things like this. And I thought, this guy's turned out so badly. Really. And just so what happened to this guy? I think he couldn't find a way to, my diagnosis is that he couldn't find a way to free himself and be in the moment, even after his practice. You know, there's a way of practicing which is very goal-directed, you know, where you say, okay, I'm 52 years old, I've been practicing for 30 years, you know, I should be at this point, right? And then you think, but I'm not, you know, and something's wrong. People have practiced Zen. You know, I've met people who have had Budai Kensho after 6 years of practice, just like the Buddha. And I've met people who have had Dai Kensho after 20 years of practice. And you might say, well, I don't have 20 years. But, you know, don't allow yourself to think in those terms. You know, and even if you're at the same thing at a sesshin, you know, don't allow yourself to say, you know, it's day one of sesshin, here's where I should be, or it's day two, I'm not making any progress on my koan. That's like making yourself unhappy. Why be unhappy? Why choose to be unhappy?
Why? Something, maybe you have to work on some more karma. You know, there's no sense in the universe is unfolding in a beautiful symphony, and we're all like notes in the symphony. We're all sacred, all Buddha. And you know, there's no I'm so ignorant of music. I'd like to, if you're E flat, you know. There's no sense worrying about being C minor, you know. You're the note you are, you know. And a perfect note, if you can just be in the moment, is suddenly the perfection of your life becomes obvious to you. And so, you know, this is what Zen practice is really all about, is just being in the moment. And the minute you can be in the moment, all problems go away. It's like this is release from karma. This is release from samsara. And the minute you say, but it's still not, I'm still not there. See, I'm still not there. That minute you've not allowed yourself to be in the moment again. You know? So a part of the brilliant strategy of Sesshin is just to wear people down to the point where all they want to do is survive, right? And so, you know, day one of Sesshin, I'm here to have Kensho. Day two of Sesshin, I'm here to answer my koan. Day three of Sesshin, I'm here to survive. Right? Day four of Sesshin, you don't even know what time it is anymore, right? Time to take the shower? Really? Already? I thought it was morning. And it's a perfect mind. It's just, you don't know whether it's noon or 10, you know, whether it's 9 in the morning or 9 at night, because you're just in the moment. And this is heaven itself. This is heaven itself. It's all we ever have. It's all we ever have. I am myself 52, and I was sitting on the cushion today, and I was thinking to myself that I don't feel 52. No. Now, I have to tell you, I'm a lot weaker than I was 10 years ago. I've just been reading something that said that as you get 50, from 50 to 60, you lose like, what was it, an astonishing amount of your physical strength. And I think I'm ahead of the schedule. Because I grade papers, I don't get a lot of physical exercise. Some upper body exercise. So I think I'm losing my physical strength, you know, but when I'm in the moment, I don't feel 52. You know, I feel like I'm 22. You know, this morning was so beautiful, everything was so fresh and alive. You know, it was like being back in the days when I was backpacking in the Southwest. You know, where I had no expectations. You know, I had a lousy job, and I got out of college. I had a lousy job. I thought, yeah, you know, I'd love to go out and backpack in the Southwest. So I hitchhiked out, and I spent the summer living in a tent with my friend Larry. Every day we didn't know what to expect. You know, we were in a beautiful place, in New Mexico and Colorado. Every day was something new. You know, and if you don't care whether it's rain or shine, you don't care whether it's cold or hot. You know, life is really wonderful, and it was just like wonderful. Get up every day and think, now what? You know, what is life going to present in front of me today? You know, and it's just like always a banquet. You know, even when you're eating macaroni and cheese for 10 days in a row, it's like the best macaroni and cheese in the world. Because it's always new. So I think this is the secret. I have been, I've been talking to my mother. Some of you know, my mother has, I guess she does have Alzheimer's disease. And, you know, I was talking to her the other day because my aunt Joan, who lives in Maplewood, New Jersey, is like 86 or something, and she had a stroke. So basically, I had the chance to visit, and I was reporting to and my mother on a Jones situation. And actually, my aunt is in really good shape. She has to use a cane, but her mind seems really with it. So anyway, I called up my mom and I said, "Mom," and my mother's taking some new anti-Alzheimer's medicine. She sounded so lucid. And I said, "Mom, you know, Joan had a stroke." Silence. And I said, "Joan, Dad's sister." Silence. And I said, do you remember Aunt Joan, Dad's sister? And my mother, there was a long pause, and my mother said, "Well, I think I can remember the name." And I realized how much has disappeared from my mother's world. And listen, this is going to happen to all of us, right? It really makes you think, what is this self? You know, what is the self? You know, I still believe it's my mother on the other end of the phone. You know, I think it is my mother still. But it's not the same person who used to go out in the summer to Lake Champlain with my father's sister, Joan, right? So, you know, this self is really impermanent, you know. It is really, whatever is there is here and for a moment and then gone. It's very, very poignant. And we think, well, we don't have Alzheimer's, but you know, how much do you remember of what happened 10 years ago, really and truly? I mean, I have trouble remembering things that happened 20 years ago. My wife and I constantly will remember things that we did together that the other person doesn't remember. So I'll say, "Do you remember when we camped out by that stream in the Pecos Wilderness?" "Well, we've never been to the Pecos Wilderness." "Whoa, yes we have, don't you remember?" And we do this to each other all the time. And she said, "Remember you had those beautiful flowers? What are you talking about?" You know, so this self is not what we think, yeah? It's here. You're changing all the time, but always here. But what stays the same is the here part. The here part. All the rest just goes. So it's very important to sort of admit it, you know, admit it and stop straining to hold on to the past or control the future. See, we're always straining, you know, trying desperately to hold on to the past, to keep hold of the things we, you know, if I just had something to hold on to. Try to hold on to the past. And we're always anxious about as the future unfolds, it's like, I can just control it. But, you know, you're just as likely to win the lottery. You know, it's crazy, really, to buy a lottery ticket. It's crazy to try to control. Nobody can say with any certainty where he or she will be in 10 years or even 12 months. Right? Two people wanted really desperately to come to Sesshin, and were all set, and at the last minute something arose to keep them from coming. One person got very ill, nothing serious, but, you know, sick. And the other person suddenly had a deadline change and had to do something by Tuesday. So you know, you can't predict. This is life. But, you know, being in the moment is really, really amazing because you can have this wonderful insight. I want to read you something that was written by a man who brought Buddhism to Tibet. His name was Padma Sampapa. And just enjoy it and then let it go. In the present moment, In the present moment, when your mind remains in its own condition without constructing anything, awareness at that moment in itself is quite ordinary. And when you look into yourself in this way nakedly, without any expectations or discursive thoughts, since there is only this pure observing, there will be found a lucid clarity without anyone being there who is the observer. Only a naked, manifest awareness is present. This awareness is empty and immaculately pure, not being created by anything whatsoever. It is authentic and unadulterated, without any duality of clarity and emptiness. It is not permanent, and it is not created by anything. However, it is not mere nothingness, or something annihilated, because it is lucid and always present. It does not exist as a single entity, because it is present and clear everywhere one looks. On the other hand, it is not created as a multiplicity of things, because it is always one and inseparable. This inherent self-awareness does not derive, from anything outside itself. This is the real introduction to the actual condition of things. You know, if all the sutras were destroyed, you know, all the books, and this passage is like the essence, is the whole truth and nothing but the truth. You know, it's difficult to put aside our fears and our expectations, our attachments and our expectations, our thoughts and our emotions. But if you just keep watching the breath, you know, they'll go away on their own. What happens sooner or later is you have a glimpse of this pure, radiant consciousness, awareness itself, naked awareness itself. In what time does this exist? In what state of time does this exist? How long? How short? Now please tell me. But if you enter this, even for a second, I think you know what you're doing at Sesshin. You know, it's like, this is why I came to Sesshin. It's always here. We're complicated. Always here. And right here, right now. And so, this is a so-called day one of our Sesshin. It's always day one of Sesshin, always first breath. And the Buddha used to say, I am always at the beginning, always at the beginning. And he was talking about the state that Padmasambhava was talking about, you know, that state. So, you know, how do we get there? Well, we are human beings, and we complicate things. So we sit on the cushion, we straighten our back, and we watch the breath, yeah? Now we don't measure time, we don't count the hours, we don't count the minutes, we just try to be in the moment. We don't say, I've been practicing for 20 years, where's my Kensho? We don't say, this is Sesshin number 22, and I still haven't answered this koan. All of this is like poisonous practice. And just say, whatever happens is okay. Whatever happens is okay. And if it takes the whole Sesshin to reach that state, then this is a marvelous opportunity for purification. You know, what a wonderful opportunity. Because if you reach that state, even for a second, it's heaven itself. Heaven itself. So don't close the door on heaven, please. You know, put your expectations aside. Put your dreams aside. Whatever you imagined was going to happen here, please put it aside. You know, every Sesshin is just heaven if you can have no expectations. And that includes, you know, I mean, if this is your first Sesshin, I understand your legs probably hurt, your back probably hurts. And when the bell rings, you think, oh my God, another 25 minutes, how am I going to get through? And, you know, please do, you know, first of all, let me just say that the Buddha, Padmasambhava, Hakuin, Tsongkhapa, all of them had the pain in their legs that you have. Don't ever imagine that the Buddha didn't have physical pain, or that the great heroes of Tibetan Buddhism didn't have a sore back. All of them had to start sesshin, or, you know, something, their version of sesshin, the same way we start, you know. But if you try to imagine getting through a sit, period of meditation, you're going to create more pain. So, you know, the thing to do is just try, you don't have to get through 25 minutes in a sit. All you have to do is be present in the moment. So no sit is really 25 minutes long. Every sit, all you have to do is get through one breath at a time. Just be fully in this moment, see? So, you know, you just follow the breath out, 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 out. And then the moment is over. And there's some pain. And then you follow the breath out, 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 out. And then the moment's over. And it's a new moment. You know? All you have to do is get from one end of the moment to the other. And the best thing, the amazing thing is, you don't have to do it yourself. You're just carried along. See, I mean, a lot of Zen practice is the trying to overcome the illusion of making things happen, right? So, you know, people think, for some crazy reason, we think we can make things happen. And yet the history of, all the things we do is the history of like unintended consequences, right? So you invent the car, it's wonderful. People can jump in and drive around, but you get global warming. I thought I could control things. And so the essence of life is that we aren't really in charge. We're like passengers on the plane. And if you just can be in the moment, you suddenly feel that you're being carried forward through the moment. Carried forward. Let yourself be carried by life, please. Let yourself be carried through the moment. It's just wonderful. See, we try and we try, and at some point, you just realize it's moving forward of its own, on its own accord. You know, this symphony is moving forward on its own accord. All I have to do is be carried along. It's like riding a wave. Just please ride the wave. So the more you resist, the more pain you create for yourself. The more you try to control it, both psychological and physical pain you create. You know, just ride the wave. You just have to ride the wave. You know, this moment's going, it's coming and it's going. Next moment, coming and going. Just ride the wave. You know, if in the course of our sitting, you know, you reach a point where your pain is unbearable. You know, I'm going to bring some chairs in and put them in the room here. And you can take a break. You can sit in the chair until you feel calm and restored, and then you can sit back down on your cushion when you're ready, or you can sit the rest of the session in your chair. It's okay. Everybody here has spent some time in the chair, session. But you know, switching from the cushion to the chair is like a little break, a little vacation. But the real work that you have to do on the cushion, whether this is your first session or your 20th session, is learning how to be in the moment. Just being in this beautiful, beautiful moment. Yeah. And not trying to control the outcome. And just don't, you can't make, you have to show up, you have to be at session. You have to sit on the cushion, but then, you know, whatever is going to happen is going to be like the universe unfolding. And it's always wonderful, always Buddha. You know, it takes a few days to get to this simplicity, but when you do, it's just heaven. It's heaven itself. Well, I'm not going to read my attempt at a koan again. Instead, I want to read a Tsongkhapa's beautiful words. In the present moment, when your mind remains in its own condition, without constructing anything, awareness at that moment is itself quite ordinary. And when you look into yourself in this way nakedly, without any thoughts, since there is only this pure observing, there will be found a lucid clarity without anyone being there who is the observer. Only a naked, manifest awareness is present. This awareness is empty and immaculately pure, not being created by anything whatsoever. It is authentic and unadulterated, without any duality of clarity and emptiness. It is not permanent, and yet it is not created by anything, anyone. However, it is not a mere nothingness or something annihilated, because it is always lucid and present. It does not exist as a single entity, because it is present in everything around you. On the other hand, it is not created as a multiplicity of things, because it is always one and inseparable. This inherent self-awareness does not derive from anything outside itself. This is the real introduction to the actual condition of things. So, it's our karma to be here today in this moment together. It's a wonderful thing. I am so glad you all could make it. I'm so glad this moment is, in a certain sense, it's eternal, isn't it? Beautiful. For as long as it's here, it's infinite in all directions. Infinite in all directions. So being with you is great joy. And, you know, ten days from now, we may no longer be here on this earth. You just don't know. But this precious moment is given to us now by this beautiful universe. So let's practice together with our whole hearts.